All right. We are live. Hello, everybody. It is Angie Atkinson, and I am here today with the lovely and talented Dana Morningstar. Dana, welcome back.
Thank you. Hello.
Hello. My pleasure. So Dana and I do this stream every week. We alternate weeks on her channel or my channel, so make sure you subscribe to both. Thrive After Abuse for Dana. It's Thrive After Abuse here on YouTube, on Facebook, on all the things, and thriveafterabuse.com. And y'all know where to find me. And I will, on the replay, link out to Dana's channel in the video here and also in the description. I forgot to do that before we started. With all of that being said, hey everybody, Robin, Eagle, Kimmy, AJ, we're going to jump in right away with a couple of things. So we're going to start off with this study that I heard about recently. It came out of Stanford, and they basically, what it comes down to is that they had this group of people, and they told some of them, hey, you're genetically predisposed to be obese. And they told other ones, you have a higher genetic predisposition for being endurance, you know, having endurance and being stronger and all that stuff. And then on the other hand, they told some people your predisposition for the opposite. You're going to be fat. You're going to be whatever. You're not going to exercise as well by genetics. And what the interesting thing is that in that case, they kind of flipped it a little bit, because some people who were told that they were predisposition for good stuff, they didn't have the genes, but some people did. And then on the other side, some people did have the good genes, and they were told they had the bad genes or whatever. The interesting thing is that in both cases, people who were told and who believed, okay, I'm genetically predisposition to X, Y, or Z, did better when they thought they had better genes, and did worse when they didn't think they had good genes. And this is regardless of the fact of if they actually had good genes or not. So I found that to be very interesting, kind of a mind over matter thing. And as you know, as you start to take in everything, like we're going to talk about in a minute, you know, you get to choose what you vibrate. You get to choose what you believe to be true. And so if you intentionally decide to yourself, hey, I'm predispositioned for greatness, guess what, y'all? It's coming, but you have to believe it. And there's more to it than this. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. Dana, what were your thoughts on this?
Yeah, we were talking before the live stream how we are just so in sync this week with topics, because I agree completely. And it's so easy to absorb these limiting beliefs from others, especially if there's some sort of authority figure.
Yeah.
And to be like, well, I guess the doctor told me that I'm predispositioned to just be this way. Or my parent told me that I'm, you know, stupid, fat, or ugly. So I guess I'm just this way. And it's so easy to absorb these messages and to take them on as truth. And the reality is that we create our own reality. And it's really the shift of having an internal locus of control and realizing that we have the autonomy and the power and control to dictate our lives and to make things happen. And if we want to have better things happen or more empowering things happen, we have to think more empowered thoughts. Just like you were saying, like, we have to consciously choose this. And one of the things that I was thinking this morning was, I've been working on this book, and I was working on a section about boundaries, and some of the reader feedback I had gotten on it from my test readers was I needed to explain boundaries better. And so I was going through it, and I thought, you know, it's so oftentimes we think about boundaries being a form of like assertiveness. So we're saying yes when we mean yes, we're saying no when we mean no, we're letting other people know like, hey, that's not okay with me. But the topic really extends further than that. And it's also about what we let in. So it's part of it's what we express, but also part of it's what we let in. And if a person without that boundary, if somebody, you know, calls them a name or, you know, says something cruel to them, if they don't have that boundary in place, all of that stuff just comes immediately into their internal environment, and they hold it as truth. So for example, a person with a healthy kind of containment boundary or self-protective boundary, if somebody calls them a name, they would say, wow, this person is so rude. Mm-hmm. that name calling is a reflection of them. It's not a reflection of me. I'm not going to absorb that because I know who I am, and I have a healthy level of self-esteem to realize I'm not that limiting belief that they said, versus a person without that boundary. If they call them a name, it's literally like a rock just sailing through an open window. It just goes completely right in, and they take it on of, oh my goodness, this person thought I was stupid, fat, or ugly. I must be that.
Yeah.
And so for a lot of us, it's sort of like, okay, now where does that leave us now? Right. But I think there's so much power in that realization of just thinking about it this way of, so often we were taking on others' truth or abuse as our own truth. Yeah. And we don't have to do that. We can make that distinction of, this is a reflection of them. This is not a reflection of me.
Truth. Yeah. And that's something I do with my clients. Maybe this will be helpful for someone. And I've done it with myself as well. It's very effective. Is write down those limiting beliefs. And then what you can usually do when you go through that list, like if you think, you know, you're stupid or you're fat or you're ugly or whatever, write those things down. And then as you look at the list, two things. First of all, realize probably that came from someone in the past. You know, some person gave you that message, whether it was a narcissistic parent or a school bully or whatever, you got this idea in your head. And then the second thing I would ask people to do is cross off the limiting belief. And then right next to it, write your new truth. What do you want to be true? What is going to be true for you? Mm-hmm. And then start to kind of do that in your mind. Every time you think to yourself, you know, I'm stupid, like mentally cross it out and then go, nope, I'm really freaking smart. You know what I mean? Literally that kind of, yeah, it's, I like to call it intentional thought management, you know?
I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then finding different references to prove yourself right.
Yeah.
So if somebody says, and here's another, because the stupid example. So if you grew up your whole life hearing that you were stupid, it can be hard for a person to be like, well, maybe I am smart. But if you can start thinking like, well, you know what I did, I was able to graduate from high school. These are the ways in which my actions have shown that I am an intelligent person. I have the capacity to make good decisions and to act in an intelligent way. And even too, like with the fat example, I was saying, oh, people say you're stupid, fat, and ugly. Even if there's some truth in that, like I would like to lose some weight, right? But if somebody were to come at me with insults, oh, you're so fat, you're so this, you're so that, even though there's truth of I want to lose some weight, mm-hmm. I don't own that. The way that they're saying it is from a less than position, or yes. They're actually coming from like a greater than position, trying to make me feel a less than position. So I don't accept that. I do accept my truth, which is, yes, I would like to lose some weight, but the way that they're coming at me is not needed, and it's not something I'm going to absorb.
Totally feel you. Absolutely. And we had, I wanted to say thank you. We had from Monica, we had a $5 super chat. And so I think we already answered one of her questions, which was how to start changing those beliefs. But I just want to throw this other one. It's kind of throwing a little loop in, but she wanted to know, how do you increase intimacy after you kind of get through this stuff? And I thought that even though it's a little bit off topic, it kind of fits here because we were talking about boundaries. And I thought that you might have some thoughts on how you can use your boundaries to allow intimacy to increase. Do you want to share that?
I think, you know, well,
or how you have,
I think however, intimacy is only possible when there are boundaries.
Yes. I totally agree.
If there are no boundaries present, then it's not an authentic sharing with the other person.
Yes.
Because we're either walking on eggshells or the other person's just not sharing their authentic self. So I think the more we practice really walking in our truth, and this truly is a practice, I still struggle with it, of truly saying yes when I mean yes, no when I mean no, and being as assertive and direct as possible about what works for me, what doesn't work for me, mm-hmm. You know, being tactful about that when approaching the other person, all of this stuff, learning to listen to them and acknowledge what, you know, what they need. And there's just this balancing act with that. So it's just a practice. But the more we can get comfortable, I think being truly intimate with ourselves and knowing our inner world, then we can better express that with other people.
Yeah, totally agree. Yeah. And we were also talking about kind of how to get through like the tough times with the holidays coming up and using these, I'm kind of getting back to where we were originally. We talked about, you know, using the ability to overcome those limiting beliefs to create our own sort of perceptions. How can we use this to get through the holidays? And I just want to touch on it really quickly and say that it certainly, when you're by yourself on the holidays or when you are, you know, not with the people that you're used to spending the holidays with, it's going to feel a little weird to you. But what I have found, because my holidays have changed because of going no contact, and what I have found is that you create new traditions, whether it's just yourself or it's you and your kids or you and your spouse or your friend or your cat.
Yeah.
You create new traditions, right? And then you choose not to focus on the bad stuff about not being with the other people. So instead of focusing on, oh, I miss how it felt to sit around the Christmas tree with everybody and do this or that, I focus on, I do not miss how it feels to be highly stressed out and have to run to 17 houses in one day or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, what are your thoughts about that, Dana?
Yeah, I love it. I'm all for kind of figuring out where is our safety and sanity in any given situation, and what is a path that we can take that's the most empowered direction.
Absolutely.
I love your suggestion of, okay, you know what? Yeah, this was the ending, going no contact. You know, it can provide a sense of relief, but it can also be really painful because there is that transition period of, well, now what?
Yeah.
And so it's okay to feel how you feel, but I love the idea of steering into creating a really new and empowered future of, okay, well, now what is this going to mean? Like, what? How do I really want to spend the holidays?
Right. Yeah.
And making it your own. Yeah, I like that.
It really helps. And I just want to say one other thing really quickly. The Spanily coaches are doing a bunch of holiday events. So there will be things on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day live hangouts that you can either, some of them you can come on YouTube and watch, and other ones you can actually Zoom in with the Zoom.us app, which is free, and talk with people directly. And this will be Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, also New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. So keep that in mind if you're alone on the holidays. Okay, let's see what else. So should we jump into the chat, Dana?
Sure.
All right. Let me see. Hi, Angel. Hey, everybody. Okay. Gabrielle, I'm so glad to hear it. Hello, Eagle, when she flies. Okay, here we go. Kit Kat says, hi, all. It's officially happened. The last thing, financial abuse. I found out he's been depositing funds from my business into his accounts, denied and lied about it. Back to the lawyer. Oh, goodness gracious. Is that coming from your end, Dana?
What?
I hear some kind of weird noise. I don't know where it's coming from.
Oh,
is that your, it's okay. I just,
maybe, I don't know. I'm trying to mess with my sound.
Oh, that must be it. Okay. Sorry. Can you hear me? Okay.
I can hear you fine. I just, I'm questioning if I set up my microphone correctly on this end, but, gotcha. People are saying they can't hear me as well. So I'm not sure what's
going
on.
Okay.
But, all right. But back to the financial abuse. Yeah.
sorry about that. Anyway, financial abuse. I have experienced it. It is terrible. And I'm, you know, definitely go back to the lawyer. Definitely. I know you're on the right track already. It sucks, but I hope it didn't. I hope it's not costing you anything important right now, except for obviously your level of stress. I know Kit Kat's situation. She's been with us since before she left her narcissist, and she then has gone through this whole process and he's now getting married again, and she's now finding out apparently that he's been stealing from her. So I'm so sorry to hear that. I know she knows about, oh, did I miss somebody else's super chat? Oh, Hope, thank you for the $5 super chat. She said, thank you very much for helping me through along my personal journey through narc abuse recovery. Thank you so much, Hope. Okay, back to where we were. I just don't want to miss those because they only have so long before they go off the screen and I can't see them.
Yes, I'm
forgetful. Anyway, the fact that you have the proof, I assume, is probably on your side, and hopefully you'll at least get your money back, if not some additional compensation for such things. Dana, what thoughts do you have? Anything to share on
that? Yep. I'm all for doing like the whole forensic accounting part of it all. I'd also pull a credit report on yourself to see if they're or any credit cards that were opened up during that time.
Good point. Yeah. My ex, actually, when I moved out, before we were legally divorced, he switched all the bills back into my name and he ran them all up and then got them cut off. So then when I went, because I originally was staying at a house where I didn't have, I was like, somebody's grandma went to into the nursing home. They needed somebody to live in the house for a while. So it worked out well. And, but I could only stay there a few months. So after that was over, I went to buy a home and my ex-husband had literally the electric bill, all the bills, in my name after I left. And I could prove that I wasn't living there, but I still had to pay them all because we were legally married. He was legally allowed to do that. Apparently. I don't know if that's true in every state, but yeah.
Wow. Anyway.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of bizarro. Anyway, did you have anything else to say about that before we?
I guess I would just make a general warning to everybody. You know, when you're dealing with a person who has shown a really problematic degree of selfishness, a lack of empathy, a lack of sincerity, and a lack of remorse, what you know right now is just the tip of the iceberg. There's generally an ongoing pattern of deceit, and this stuff, odds are you will continue to find out stuff years or even decades later of just all of the manipulation and the deceitfulness. So I would just really go into self-protective mode as much as you can, financially, emotionally, physically, and just don't assume that they're going to interact with you like an honest, decent person. Especially if they've never acted like an honest, decent person in the past.
Yeah.
They're for sure not going to start now. So.
Yep. Absolutely. I just want to add one more comment on Kit Kat said, I wish I believed that he would do everything that you described as a narcissist a year ago. Denial is such a waste of time. Thanks for the enlightenment. I didn't waste days anymore. It's great. That's awesome.
That is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have a question for us?
Yeah, here's one from Mira who says, how do you forget and move on from your ex who stole more than $2,000 from your purse? I felt like it was a real relationship until I found out he's done that, and I'm more angry than anything.
Well, sometimes anger can propel you forward in healthy ways. So did she say, what was the beginning of the question? How could she move on or what was it?
I think it sounds like she's struggling with being really, really angry and hurt. She thought it was the real relationship. He stole $2,000 out of her purse.
Okay. I would suggest this. First of all, if you haven't left already and moved forward, then use the anger to propel you away from that person. And then start to deal with the pain. I understand the pain. It's horrible when you have this realization and suddenly everything you thought was true, you start to question. With that being said, if he stole the money, you know, there's nothing wrong with reporting that to the police. I would say that to start with, if you know for sure that it was him. But outside of that, I would say to start to focus on self-care, on self, you know, awareness and things like that. But to in the meantime, to use the anger to propel forward out. If you then need to let go of the anger because you're already out, what I suggest to people is to write a letter to that person without censoring yourself and say all the things that you originally wish you could have said to that person, all the angry words, all the happy, sad, whatever you have to say, put it on paper. And then I found I didn't need to send the letter because physically writing it was enough for me. And then I was able to, I burned it. Some people throw it down the river, whatever, bury it. But I burned it and I felt so much relief after that. But what are your thoughts, Dana?
Yeah, I really like that. I think we definitely have to give ourselves closure with this, because in situations like that where it can, you know, I agree with you. I would call the police, file a report, but also realizing it's going to be very difficult to prove. In situations like that, it's understandable and normal to feel incredibly victimized and hurt and just, you know, used and exploited and all of that. So how you feel is very normal. I would also encourage you, this person stole $2,000, I think sometimes we have to just look at money that was either stolen from us or that we lost in a divorce or in a relationship. Sometimes we just have to look at that money as tuition at the school of hard knocks. And sometimes that is the best money that you'll ever spend. because there's so many lessons that you can get out of that. And this is what, you know, my channel is for. This is what Angie's channel is for, is to really help everybody squeeze out as much as they possibly can from these incredibly painful experiences, to use it for your highest and greatest good, for your personal growth, and to take you to the next level. And I don't know about you guys, but I mean, for me, the painful situations have been the ones that I've learned the most from. And there's a tremendous amount that we can really squeeze out of this, and so that you can get your money's worth.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Kit Kat, I'm throwing you a blue wrench, girl. So help me out. anyway. yeah, I'm totally with you on that. I want to just really quickly touch base on this. Somebody says, I was told that you were going to upload a video of an interview between Coach Eli and someone called Riff Mangros. Magos. I don't know who that is, and I don't know of anything about that, but maybe
I don't either.
Different channel. Okay. And then Kit Kat adds, empowerment seems like it grows as the time goes on over here. There's nothing I can't get through anymore, but it took a year of seeing that I could do it by myself. Thank you for sharing that. That's incredible. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We have a super chat. Hold on a minute. $5. Oh, thank you, Sue. I appreciate you. Thank you, Sue Boyce. Appreciate you. She didn't even have a comment. She just said thanks. Thank you, Sue.
Very cool.
Right on. Okay. Thank you, Ed. Oh, thank you, Lisa from sunny Florida. I appreciate you. Okay. We're trying to, do you have, okay, wait a minute.
Here's a question, if sure. You're looking for one.
Yes.
This is from Tripp, who says, is it common for narcissistic mothers to give the child no affection?
For some narcissistic mothers, yes, many. Most of them, when they do give affection, it's only done in public or as a way to manipulate the child, in my experience. Thoughts, Dana?
Yeah, I agree. Or if the affection, either they're totally disinterested in the child, mm-hmm. and the child is a burden, mm-hmm. Or if they are giving the child attention, it could also be only under, it's very conditional.
Yes.
Like you either become the person that I want you to be, or I'm going to not give you the affection or nurturing that you need.
Yeah. And then so. I've actually seen a couple of cases where the mother was, seemed to be the best mom in the whole wide world, but they were like, my child is my best friend kind of moms. And they mm-hmm. didn't know the boundaries. And so then they were like almost too affectionate in some cases. So I've seen that as well. But I think in general, most narcissistic mothers are exactly what we just stated.
Yeah. You know what you're saying about the kind of this enmeshment of the dynamic. I've seen that too, where you've got a mother or a father, a parent who's incredibly overly involved with their child. And it can come across as others like, oh, you guys are such a close-knit family. This is so great. You know, you guys spend all this time together. But when you get to really see the dynamic, it's like, oh my gosh, this child has no say-so in their own life. They have no autonomy. They're still, even if they're 50 years old, they're still being puppeteered by their parent who's so controlling and so just overbearing and all consuming that this child doesn't even really have an identity outside of what the parent wants them to do. And that's sad.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Let's see.
So we got a comment. You're looking for one. Okay. Teacher Springs is talking about the holidays trigger my depression and anxiety really bad. I have major PTSD from narcissistic family dynamics on holidays. And I just wanted to touch on, Angie, what you had said earlier, which is really recreating, kind of overwriting all of that, those negative memories, and truly creating the holiday that you want. And I would encourage you guys to really make a concerted effort to do that. So even if that means, okay, my new holiday tradition is going to be, we watch, I don't know, some funny Christmas movies, or now we're going to drink eggnog. Or maybe if you drank eggnog before and you have a negative memory with that, maybe now this time you drink apple cider. Mm. Like you just really change it up. Whereas before, maybe if you watched a bunch of Christmas movies and there's all this kind of negative association around that, maybe you watch action adventure instead, or comedy. Really make it your own and change it up.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree. And I like this this comment from Kimberly as well. She says, rigorous honesty with yourself. It's paying attention to how you really feel rather than how you think you should feel. I think that's a really good tip for anyone, anytime, really.
That's so huge.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we are told how to feel often in this society, and especially when we have narcissists in our lives, or we're told how we do feel. I remember my narcissist saying, you're not that upset, stop crying, or, you know, you're not really happy about that, you're just faking. I really think part of that is just because they themselves are so often calculating their emotions that you know, they're doing it for a reaction instead of actually because they feel stuff. But
yeah,
regardless, yeah. Yeah. I saw a thing about somebody asked, I don't know what the question was, but somebody asked about, Hope did, about narcissistic fleas. Let me find that. Because I know that's a really good, I guess there was only, okay. Hope says, how do I get rid of narcissistic fleas? So I think that's a great question. Can we take that one next?
Absolutely.
Okay. Go for it. All right. So just for those of you who don't know, narcissistic fleas are the types of behaviors that we pick up from narcissists, like when we're in long-term relationships or we grow up with them. For example, when I grew up with a narcissistic family person, I came out of that home believing that the woman's supposed to run the house and the man just does whatever she said. That didn't work out that well for me. But on the plus side, I have since learned that that was a flea and that relationships are more of a 50-50 thing. So that has been a godsend in my current marriage. Anyway, with that being said, the point is letting go of the things that those behaviors, recognizing them first, and just what we were just talking about, being aware of ourselves and what we're doing, and then intentionally choosing to change them, you know, through thought management, behavior management, intentional vibration management, I think is where you start. So when you notice yourself doing those behaviors, then you stop and you go, I don't want to be that person. I want to be this person. And then you react in that kind of a way instead. Now, something that might help is to write them all down again and then realize where they came from and realize why you want to drop them. And then intentionally in your mind, replace those behaviors with these new behaviors that you predetermine. Wow. Just as a way to kind of get rolling, because really what you want to do is respond in a genuine fashion as often as you can. But you want to do it in a healthy, constructive way, if that makes sense. Dana, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a couple of things. You know, what you were saying about being genuine and expressing yourself genuinely. Pia Melody refers to this, and I love the way she refers to this. She refers it as expressing ourselves moderately. Mm. And I just thought that's such an appropriate, perfect word for that, because that does take time. And, you know, this healthy dynamics, they're not taught. They're very rarely role modeled. So we're all kind of discovering new territory as we go. But I like the idea of learning to really express ourselves moderately. So, and part of that, when we are taking time to be kind of self-reflective and we're taking that, you know, kind of honest and what is the AA and anonymous programs refer to it, like an honest and searching moral inventory of ourselves. That can be a very difficult thing to do. And it's ongoing. And that can, I mean, and there's a wide mix of emotions that continue to happen as we continue to realize things about ourselves with oftentimes shock and horror of, oh my goodness, I can't believe I was acting this way. Like, what was I, like, that is so not okay. Or, you know, from here on out, I'm going to do different. And, it's just, it's all part of personal growth, but when we know different, we can start to do different.
That's right. And you can't be mad at yourself for not knowing different before you knew different. Don't forget. It's important.
Yeah. It really is.
Yeah. This is a great question from, it's more of a statement, but it kind of goes here. Carry on says, when I'm tactful about putting up boundaries, no one takes me or my boundaries seriously. And I think we can all relate to that a little bit, but that's when you just, you know, you can calmly say again and again, I'm not going to accept that. I'm not going to accept that or whatever. Or you can say it once and walk away. And depending on the situation, I mean, this is what I do. I say it once. And if somebody doesn't respect it, then I step back from that person physically and or mentally. What are your thoughts about that, Dana?
Yeah. I think for a boundary to fully be complete, there has to be some sort of corrective action that you're willing to implement. It's sort of like when you're with a child and you're telling them, hey, if you do X, Y, and Z, you know, you're not going to have phone privileges for the rest of the night.
Right.
And if they keep doing it, you don't keep telling them that. Hey, I told you to knock it off. You're not going to have the phone. Hey, I told you. They're not taking you seriously because there's no consequence. So they do it again. You take the phone away. You can have it back 8 a.m. tomorrow, but we're done. I told you. And you just kept doing it. So it's the same thing with adults. When you're setting a boundary, if we're standing there arguing our boundary or continually reinforcing it, then we're not really setting a boundary. Yeah. So it's important to kind of think about, if you say, let's say, for example, your boss says, hey, I really need you to work weekends. And that doesn't work for you. You've got a home life and things going on. And if you were to say, hey, you know what? I can't, I've got all of this stuff going on at home. You know, I'm sorry, that's just not going to work for me. And then you hold your ground. Or if it's with a friend who is, you know, calling you at all hours of the day and night, and you're not okay with that, you're like, you know what, I need my sleep, I've got to work in the morning, to then say, hey, you know what, I really don't do phone calls after 9 o'clock. From 9 to 10, that's my wind down time or whatever. And then you make a concerted effort to not answer the phone after 9 o'clock. Or you just turn off the volume, but you've got to hold the line, because if you don't, then it's just empty words.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And then another boundaries question. Robin wants to know, in setting boundaries, what's the difference between a flaw and a red flag? If it's a subjective difference, she says, then I will feel unsure about the boundary that I place. And I don't think that's relevant. I think if you have a boundary, I mean, I guess my question is, how is it relevant? Because a flaw and a red flag, it's, everybody has flaws. And what we mean by a red flag is something to be concerned about. Okay. So a flaw might be, you know, that somebody leaves their clothes on the floor next to the bed every night before they go to sleep, you know, instead of putting them in the laundry basket or whatever. And then mm-hmm. a red flag might be that they scream at you when they wake up and see you didn't pick it up. You know,
just yeah,
off the top of my head. What are your thoughts about that? Anything?
Yeah, I think, you know, if it's a big deal, if it's an issue for you, then it's an issue. You know, there's no such thing as a petty issue. I mean, if it's a concern for you, it's worth bringing up. So, you know, red flag stuff, if we're using the term red flag as being synonymous with deal breakers, then that's a kind of a different thing. So then I would get really clear with yourself on what are deal breakers. You know, I mentioned this before, but for example, some of mine are, I don't do abuse of any kind. Mm-hmm. And generally the abuse that you'll see up front with problematic people is verbal and emotional abuse.
Yeah.
So if that stuff starts, if they start yelling, if they start using your past against you, if they start belittling, name calling, becoming aggressive or intimidating, I'm done.
Yeah.
Hey, automatic deal breaker.
Yeah. Dana, I think I just figured out what might be wrong. I think you're coming through your laptop instead of your mic. If you open up the Zoom window and you click the little arrow next to the microphone where it says mute, there's a drop down that comes up and it should show you which microphone you're coming out of. Do you see that? Sorry, this is live TV, people.
Yeah.
Live
YouTube. Oh, okay. Let's try this.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that better?
Oh, so much better. Yeah. Oh,
okay. Yeah. Yes. Problem solved. Thank you so
right
much.
Right on. My pleasure. Okay. I just was, I noticed in the chat, several people kept saying it. And I was like, well, she does sound a little tinnier than usual. So how's that, guys? Is that better? Let us know in the chat.
Okay.
Yes. Right on.
Very cool. But back to the, cause I think this is a great point. And this is when people start, kind of trying to navigate, well, what is the difference between, you know, is this a concern or is this a red flag? This is kind of one of those beginning stages. I get so excited when people ask questions like this, because these are some of the beginning stages of them really discovering boundaries and where, what is okay for you and what is not. And so, like I was mentioning before, some of my stuff is abuse of any kind is an automatic deal breaker. That's not negotiable. It's not something I'm willing to discuss. I'm just done. Mm-hmm. Active addictions, you know, shopping, drinking, drugs, that kind of stuff. They need to figure that out and get sober and on the right track before they can have a relationship. So abuse, addiction, adultery, or a really rotten attitude, if they're continually just bringing me down, telling, squashing my dreams right and left, like that's not going to work either. So outside of those deal breakers, then it's stuff that's open for negotiation. So like here's a small example. The other day, I do the laundry in our household. And I have a pet peeve. I am very particular about how I hang up clothes and how I do things. And I like all of the empty hangers to be on, just like the right side of the closet so I can easily find them when I'm hanging up clothes again. Totally not a big deal. I realize that it's me. Like that's something I'm particular with, right?
Right.
But I had mentioned to Travis, hey, you know, this is, would you mind doing this? It just makes my life easier. That way I'm not hunting down all these empty hangers throughout your whole closet. And he was fine with it. So it's just being assertive with yourself when stuff is kind of getting under your skin, and then you'll know, like, you know, like then you go from there, I guess.
Yeah. Great point. Hi, James F. Hi, Phoenix. Okay. Let's see here.
But, you know, real quick too, back to the whole boundary thing, something else that I see time and time again, and I've experienced this too, so I mean, I do get it, is where when a person's starting to really kind of get in tune with their boundaries and get in tune with when they're being mistreated, this is such a big thing. So like I was saying before, the verbal abuse and the emotional abuse, this is the kind of stuff that tends to surface early on. It's the snarky comments. It's the silent treatment. It's the bouts of rage. It's inappropriate comments. It starts off small and then it tends to build. If we're not in tune with when we're actually being mistreated and we don't know how to address that effectively, or we feel like that's being too petty and it's not worthy of walking away, then what happens is this stuff tends to grow until it becomes really a problem. But if a person's not aware of their own power in all of this, to them, it looks like, what's wrong with me? I just attract narcissists. Whereas that kind of people, those kinds of people are just out there and they're attracted to anybody and anybody can encounter them. But the difference is a person with that internal locus of control who understands when they're being mistreated, who has deal breakers, when they experience that treatment, they are immediately like, oh, no go. You are in the no fly zone, buddy. And they're just done.
Yeah.
Versus us. And this is, it's finding your sea legs, because over time, the more you get in tune with when you're being mistreated and how to handle it, the less time the toxic people suck up from you, because you're quicker to get them out of your life when that stuff does start.
Yeah. And without even realizing it, you just answered a question from Michael Dennis. You didn't ask, you didn't read that one, did you?
No.
He said, okay. He says, is it common after narcissistic abuse to still do things for the narcissist because you feel like you owe them something? And I think it is probably more common than a lot of us would care to admit. But I also think that Dana's answer, what Dana just said, answers that question perfectly. You know, set your boundaries and don't.
It's just such a process. It truly is such a process. And it's this ongoing self-reflection of these realizations of, oh my gosh, I didn't realize I'd been operating from guilt and doing all of these things. Or, oh my gosh, I felt totally, these are all boundary issues. I was feeling really responsible for things that I wasn't responsible for.
Yeah.
You know, they were calling me, they need money for rent. They need a ride to the grocery store. They need. Our old dynamic was they needed, and then I was there for them, right? That's not healthy. And so a more balanced dynamic with healthy boundaries is realizing they're an adult, they're responsible for themselves. I'm an adult, I'm responsible for myself.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And
then towing that line, but it, you know, it's awkward because it's growth. It's something that's new. And so you're going to feel probably mean and bad and uncomfortable and awkward, you know, the first dozen or so times you start setting those boundaries, because it's just something new.
Yeah.
It does get easier with time.
Absolutely. It does. Yeah. All right. Let's see here. So I wanted to point out a couple things. Jen Archer, hey Jen, and Katie Clappers both have said, well, Jen Archer says that she wrote the letter and that we talked about earlier, letting go of the anger with the narcissist. She said, and she ripped it up and she stomped on it, then burned it, and it worked for her. So I thought that's cool. And then Katie Clapper said she wrote a 7-page letter and that's going to propel her forward by writing a book. And I think that's awesome, Katie. I definitely recommend writing a book. It's a great idea. All right. Where were we? Do you have a question for us?
I do. Here's okay. One from Robin. I think this is great. And again, this is some of the early stage things where we're starting to kind of question, is it me? Is it them? You know, what is my responsibility in all this? And what do I have control over?
Yeah.
And hold on. The chat just started scrolling.
She says, sometimes
I got it. Sometimes I don't know if everyone around me is just toxic or if I create toxicness by allowing things.
Interesting. Okay.
You want to go?
I would love to go.
Okay.
Okay. Go. Okay. So I think that we do have a tendency to allow toxic people into our lives when we don't know that they are toxic, when we don't understand what it means to be toxic. And sometimes because we're often raised with toxicity in our lives, we don't always recognize it as bad or abnormal. We just think everybody's like that. But when we start to kind of wake up and see the toxicness, I bet you 90% of the people that I have helped in coaching and through here on YouTube have said to me, at some point in their recovery, have said, why are there so many toxic people around me? Is it me? Am I drawing them in? And the truth is, it's because of the lack of what we're talking about today, the boundaries, the lack of boundaries, really. Dana, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So a lot of this stuff early on with toxic people being drawn to us or us keeping them in our lives, it tends to be because we're really oversharing. Mm-hmm. Way too much information. We're making ourselves vulnerable. We tend to be kind of hooked by the fantasy that they're going to be whatever they're pretending to be. They come on really strong. And for a person that's maybe been starved out emotionally for a while, that can feel like you've met this perfect person. But a person who is not starved out and who has healthy boundaries, they don't view that stuff the same way. So yeah. For example, let's say you're dating, okay? And you get a message from somebody who's like, oh, hey doll, I think you're so hot. You know, I would love to meet up with you. What are you doing tonight? You know, kissy faces, right?
Yeah.
To a person that has healthy boundaries, they would be repulsed by that.
Right.
And be like, this person's obviously either really immature or they're just looking for sex. And that's no, like right. This is not, if I'm looking for a relationship, I'm not going to find it here. Right. But a person who's starved out and this goes back to like, if you're not aware of when your boundaries are violated, or if you're not, aware that there's a disconnect between what the fantasy is, like what we're hoping a situation will be and what a situation actually is, then we're continually setting ourselves up to fail and we're not even realizing it.
Truth.
So a person that's been starved out emotionally, they might get a text like that and they're like, oh, this person's hot. They keep texting. Well, and maybe they even do stuff like, well, I don't know. They try to make it work is what I'm getting at. Well, how about we go out for dinner, I'll meet you at dinner. And then in their mind, they're like, well, I was really assertive. I didn't meet them at their house like they wanted me to, but I met them at a restaurant and said, and they're thinking that that's good boundaries. When really that whole being called pet names right out of the gate, a person wanting you to drop everything and meet them immediately, signing the post with like X's and O's, all of this stuff, it's way too much too soon. And so trying to make a problematic situation work is just delaying the inevitable.
Mm.
So it's paying attention to that stuff that's soon, the first kind of few weeks. Go back and look at the different toxic people that you've had in your life and examine what was that first few weeks or month like with them? Because odds are it was them coming on strong out of the gate, you wanting to spend a ton of time with them and them wanting to do the same. And then it just creates this whirlwind that becomes a tornado. And next thing you know, you're off in Oz and it's not good.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, let's see here. So there are so many good. Okay. I can't find it now, but Stacy was asking, she's trying to go into contact with her father and she wants to know, you know, she says part of her wants to go to Christmas and the other part of her doesn't want to go. And I can kind of relate to this because I don't, like I said, I don't do those family Christmases anymore. And I'll say this, there is a part of me that misses part of that experience, but this other bigger part of me doesn't want to have to regret going every year. And now I focus, like I said, on what is good about not going, like not feeling stressed out and getting to be in my pajamas all day if I want. And, you know, having a nice meal with my kids and enjoying the day and just not overdoing it the whole time. So, Stacy, I would ask you, what is it that you want, you know, what makes you want to go and what can you get out of not going? And can you make new traditions for yourself? I know you have a new girlfriend. Can you two make new traditions together, or what, you know, kind of try to think of it from that perspective. If you regretted going last year, then you know you're going to regret going this year, you know, and I know you also have a brother. And so I think there is still maybe a possibility of maybe you could just go see him around the holiday instead of on the holiday. Just a thought. Dana, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. This is where getting in tune with yourself can actually start to get kind of fun, because if you're around, this is going to almost sound like masochistic, but like if you're around these situations that you know are going to trigger you, it can be, it can provide a lot of insight. So if you can stay grounded enough to where you're not getting triggered and reactive, mm-hmm. but you can watch these emotions surface within you, these are all really great indicators of, okay, what I'm doing is not working for me. So if going over to their house is, or them coming over to your house or whatever it is too much, then maybe you guys just have lunch and maybe you meet them at a restaurant or you meet them at their house. That way you can leave versus trying to get them out the door. So it's kind of, it's just shifting the dynamic around to figure out, okay, how can I make this enjoyable? Because this should be enjoyable. And yes. If it's not, then things continue to need to change. And so many times with holidays, people do, they act out of this feeling of obligation and guilt of, oh, well, you know, my parent who I don't get along with at all really wants to see me. So I guess I'll go over there for 10 days over the holidays or a week. And, you know, I can't afford it and I'm going to bring all the kids and it's just going to be really expensive, really, you know, just exhausting and draining. And then we're there and then we all fight. And it's just, why? There's no point. Like there's no bonding that's going on during all that. So you might as well figure out what will be enjoyable and then just reverse engineer it and then make it happen.
Absolutely. And Trip, thank you for the $5 super chat. Trip was the one that was asking if narcissistic mothers were common, you know, commonly didn't give affection. I'm sorry. I'm trying to like stay on top of all the things. Anyway, okay.
Oh, here's one. So kind of feeding on that.
Great.
Stacy says, being alone with my dad is what I don't like. I'm worried he will take me to the side. So, okay. So let's say you're going into this is not your first rodeo, right? Like this is how this dance tends to go. So mm-hmm. if you know that you're walking into this dynamic with family, especially to not let, I think it's important that we get out of hoping or coping mindset.
Yeah.
I hope that they're going to somehow act different than they ever have in the past, because that's just, it's deferred disappointment is what that is. So getting out of hoping and getting out of coping, well, okay, then they're going to act problematic and then I'm just going to try to cope with it.
Yeah.
So there's other ways of handling it. Like we can be assertive. We can anticipate is a big one. So if you know, okay, I have this, you know, I'm concerned my father's going to pull me aside and he wants to have, he's going to talk a bunch of trash about my mom, or he's going to, you know, say whatever, or just put me in an awkward position, then plan for that.
Yeah.
Okay. What if he does do that? Then what? what are you going to say? Because when those situations come up, if we haven't anticipated them, it can really knock us off balance to where we just go with the flow and we smile and nod. And then after the fact, we just feel really gross as in upset and angry as to how this happened again.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And on that same token, or a similar token, actually, same topic. Nail says, I sometimes struggle not on setting boundaries, but on what the consequence should be. And what he means, I can't know if Nails, I think Nails is a, what Nails means is that, you know, how do you, like, not that you would punish a person, but what do you do if they break that boundary? What if they cross that boundary? How do you deal with it? And I think for me, it's about, again, making my you know, space, putting space between me and that person so they don't have the opportunity to step over the boundary again, proverbially speaking. But it's not just like physical space. It's not allowing them, you know, into what I consider my inner circle sort of consequences. I mean, really, what are the consequences? You continue to let them do that to you or you don't. And I think the way to ensure that they don't is to remove yourself from their influence as quickly as possible. What are your thoughts, Dana?
Yeah. And, you know, getting, like Angie was saying, physical distance, mental distance, and I would say emotional distance.
Yes.
So if a person has shown you that they are emotionally unsafe, you tell them things in confidence, they're gossiping to other people. You tell them about your past, things that are really, very sensitive to you, they use them against you. They're creating, you just get the vibe that they can't be trusted, you know, in general. Then this is a time you start stepping back emotionally and you stop opening up to them about these deep things about yourself because they've shown that they can't be trusted with that. And so that's part of it. That this distance wise, sometimes it's staying busy. Sometimes it's just refusing plans that they want to make with you. If you absolutely are roped into something, it's saying that you need to leave early. It's potentially going no contact. You know, there's kind of thinking about, okay, how, like, what do I need to do in order to keep my safety and sanity intact? Sometimes that might mean moving. It might mean quitting a job. I mean, it can be extreme and, you know, and that's okay too. So,
yeah.
You know, it's you got to do what you got to do. And you got to realize that if you've got a person like this in your life, that's so pathological and they're so manipulative and being assertive with them doesn't stop things. If additional communication doesn't add any clarity, it only adds further confusion. Mm-hmm. It would be wise to really go into like self-protective mode and to stop trying to add more communication to it because that's not the issue.
Yeah.
So
I agree. And Wonder Girl adds kind of a layer onto this for us. She says, when you share a child, there aren't many or any consequences that you can implement when setting a boundary. That's the problem. I have to keep contact with him. I agree, except that what you don't have to do, if you're sharing a child, you do have to keep in contact legally until that child's 18 or whatever your papers say, you know, but you don't have to be in relationship with that person. You can look at it like a business thing.
Yeah.
So you are doing the business of raising that child. You can use a court-approved app to communicate and insist on it, and or only communicate in text and or short pre-planned statements upon pickup and drop-off times, you know what I mean, and just refuse to engage further. Only yes. Engage about your child. It's hard sometimes, but if you stick to it, they'll get bored and move on and try something else with someone else instead, as far as the manipulation goes. Thoughts, Dana?
Yeah, and you know, and prepare yourself, because other people generally have, if they haven't gone through something like this, if they haven't been on the receiving end of an abusive ex, a verbally abusive or emotionally abusive ex, you'll probably get a lot of this well-intended bad advice of, oh, it's really important that the parents work together for the children's best interest and that, you know, be friends with your ex and be pleasant and all of this stuff, but they're missing the context of this person we don't need to be somebody's verbal or emotional or physical punching bag. Mm-hmm. And it's okay to disagree with a lot of the advice that's thrown out around that about, oh, well, you should just be accommodating for the child's benefit. Yeah. And if a person's really nasty to you, I would definitely keep documenting it in text and or email, keep a paper trail, but then only keep the conversation about the child and really make it a point to not get derailed into talking about your personal life or defending yourself or trying to argue anything. You're just very keeping it very transactional.
Mm. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. All right. I see that we are just about to the close to the end of our time. So do you want to each of us pick one more question?
Sure.
Okay. Do you have one or do you?
No. Okay.
All right. Let's see here. I have one. Wait a minute. I thought I did. Oh, this is kind of interesting. So Robin says, do they have an invisible switch that her narcissist is psycho and then instantly changes to the sweetest person ever? Is that normal? I mean, what's normal? But when we're talking about narcissists, I mean, some of them are that way. And you know, they will, for example, one thing that I've seen often with narcissists is out in public, they're one way. And like, they might be like, okay, see you later, bye. And then as soon as the car door closes and they can't hear you anymore, they'll be like, that's it. When we're at home, this horrible thing is about to happen or whatever. Or they start attacking you for how you behaved or whatever. And I've seen that kind of switch happen. And I've also seen it happen to where they kind of almost seem like we might almost want to call them bipolar, because they kind of flip on a dime, even in private sometimes. Like, you'll think everything's fine and then all of a sudden, bam, they're crazy. You don't know what you did wrong. And then another interesting fact that I've seen is that once, a lot of times narcissists will dump all of their emotional garbage on you, and then suddenly they're light and happy and feeling great, and you're over here in tears and about to lose your mind, and you don't know why. Well, it's literally, they've literally dumped their emotional garbage on you. They've taken their negative energy and they've taken it out on you, put it on you. And now it's in you, on you, around you, and you can't, it's hard to let go of it when you don't realize what they've done. And then you look over at them and they're all happy and light and everything's great. And you're like, what? So that's another thing to be aware of. But what would you, do you have anything to add about the invisible switch, Dana?
Yeah, I guess kind of to follow along with that, Robin had said, you know, can they get a therapist and medication to help control it? If we're talking personality disordered stuff, generally no. I mean, therapy, first of all, anybody, if a person's going to change, they have to actually want to change, and yes, they have to have an ongoing driving motivation to change. So even if they have this real, let me talk. Okay. So for me, trying to lose weight, okay, I am very motivated to lose weight. There are times where I am so motivated, I'll step on the scale and I'm like, wow, okay, something's really got to change. And man, I am really on track for mm-hmm. about a few days.
Yeah.
And then I slide into my old habits. Mm-hmm. It's the same way with any type of pattern of behavior that anybody has. And so even if they want to change, changing is really hard. And it oftentimes involves a lot of, it's just a process, and it oftentimes takes years for a person to really truly get to that place where they're done and that they're going to do better. If you're talking about a person whose personality is so volatile, mm-hmm. really there's a stronger chance that they're going to really hurt you before they're going to change. And it's important that we realize, you know, what we have control over and what we don't have control over. And we don't have control over that. And if a person's aggressive in any way, shape, or form, I would strongly encourage you to make that a deal breaker, because this stuff can escalate very fast. And there's no empathy or remorse when a person's in that aggressive, that when they're in that fight mode.
Yeah.
They'll feel totally entitled for treating you however they treat you. So.
Absolutely. Yep. Hi, Debbie. Good to see you. Yeah. I'm with you 100%.
And here's real quick a, mm-hmm. Oh, you just got a super chat.
I sure did. Okay. Sure. Opal Unicorn. Thank you. She says, how do you deal with the holidays and not feel guilty for going no contact? Can you elaborate more on the holiday struggle? Absolutely. Here's the thing. You go no contact because you are emotionally battered by this person on some level. You are being treated terribly. Let's just make it really simple. You go no contact because when you're around that person, you feel bad every time, or almost every time. You usually walk away from that person feeling worse than you did when you got there. So how do you deal with the guilt? You start with realizing that for your whole life, you probably haven't been taking care of yourself the way you should. And then you recognize that if you're ever going to be happy, you must let go of people who consistently inject toxicity into your life. And so you have to kind of get to this place where you're almost indignant. Like, how dare you treat me that way? You know, because it's beyond what is healthy or normal. And so I think what I have done when we're talking about the holiday struggle, I have, like I said, I literally sat down, I figured out new traditions, new ways to do things. And I focus again on what I love about not having to go to the holidays instead of what I miss. And anything I do miss, if I can incorporate it into my new holiday celebrations, then I do that. But the guilt factor, you know, as with anything, you must remind yourself why you're doing it. You must not forget. And especially, oh, it's so easy during the holidays to slip into, but it's my mom, it's my dad, it's my whatever. But you must recognize that we didn't get the luck of some people. We didn't have as normal or healthy of a situation as we could have. So if you are no contact, you are no contact for a reason. And letting a holiday thing happen just because it's a holiday thing is not going to make it better. However, one more thing I'll add, and that is that in some cases, you might be able to go to a big holiday gathering and still not talk to that person outside of the holiday gathering. So if that's something you can do, great. It's not something I could do. It became too much of an issue for me. I tried that. It didn't work that well for me, and it is what it is. So Dana, what thoughts do you have on that? Anything?
Yeah, no, I think you nailed it.
Yeah, right on. All right. And thank you again, Opal, for that. I hope that's a little bit helpful. And I would also suggest to you that you check out my video. I have a video on feeling guilty for no contact. So check that out. Mm-hmm. You can just type in Angie Atkinson, guilty for no contact or something like that in the search. Or I'll try to put it in the pinned comment when this goes live. When it publishes officially. All right. Do you have any other last comments for us?
Actually, I do. I wanted to mention real quick about the feeling guilty. And I think this was also a Pia Melody thing where she had said, it's very common for a person, let's say you're interacting with a person who is acting in a way where they're shameless. They don't feel shame. They have no, they're very, explosive. They're abusive. Verbally, emotionally, physically, you name it. They have no boundary with that. They're acting in a way where they're not owning their behavior. There is no appropriate level of guilt or remorse or shame. The result of that is those of us that do have an understanding of appropriate behavior and boundaries, then we tend to we carry that. We carry their shame for them because it's sort of like it's somebody's got to, because it's just there and they're not owning it. It's sort of like when you're online and you watch a really cringy video and the person doesn't realize that it's cringy.
Yeah.
And then we feel cringy and embarrassed for them.
Yeah.
It's an interesting way to kind of understand this. So the guilt that you're feeling is not your own. You're feeling guilty because they're not accepting their behavior and taking ownership of it.
Yeah.
So you can try just kind of putting it back on them. Like, it's okay to be self-protective. It's okay to make your safety and your sanity a top priority and to limit or minimize the contact around certain people.
Yeah. And then I just want to add one more thing. Ask yourself, what would you tell your child or your best friend or someone else that you love unconditionally in those circumstances? What would you say to them if they said, oh, I feel really guilty for not going to this abusive person's holiday celebration? Literally ask yourself that question, because your opinion is going to change quick if you think of it from that perspective. Mm-hmm. So another thought. All right.
Yep. And actually one more thought onto that, because sometimes people are like, well, they've been told, oh, well, you just need to be friends with them or have more compassion or, have sympathy for them. I think it's important that we realize that I think this is Dalai Lama who said this, our compassion for others is not complete until it includes ourselves.
Right.
So there's got to be that sense of mutuality in all of our interactions with other people, or there's something that's off. And if there's something that's off, it becomes lopsided and it eventually just topples over.
Yep. Totally agree.
Okay. That's all.
Absolutely. All right.
Are we doing this next week? It's Christmas Day.
Yeah, let's not.
Okay.
Let's skip a week or two. Okay. So we will not be here on Christmas Day, although you can watch some of the Queen Bean coaches on Christmas Day, not on this channel, on different channels. But you can get all the information about that in an upcoming video, and also it'll be published on Queen Bean. As always, Dana, thank you so much for being here and for doing this little partnership with me. I really am grateful for you all the time. Thank you.
Well, I feel the same way about you. I just really enjoy our time and your thoughts on this. And it's just so cool to be able to have this community and to do that. Whoever thought we would be here, huh?
I know, right? I know, but I love it. And I'm so thrilled. So everybody, once again, make sure you subscribe to Dana's channel. When I do the replay on this, you will see right now you will start to see the little subscription buttons, but make sure you subscribe to Dana's channel for Rave After Abuse. We will be there, not next week, but probably either the week after or 2 weeks out, depending on when that next one falls on. And thriveafterabuse.com, Thrive After Abuse on Facebook, support group and page, right?
Yep.
All right. We'll see you guys next week. Dana, thank you so much.
Happy holidays, everybody.
Happy holidays. Bye. Bye-bye.